The action of Ibsen's John Gabriel Borkman takes place on an estate outside Christiania in Norway on a winter's evening in 1896. In our stereo production tonight, Ralph Richardson plays John Gabriel Borkman, Irene Wirth, Ella Rendheim, Sylvia Coleridge, Mrs. Borkman, and Prunella Scales, Mrs. Wilson. The translation by William Archer is edited and produced by Charles Lefeu. John Gabriel Borkman.
Wilton, I suppose.
No, ma'am, a strange lady. A Miss Ella Rendheim.
Are you sure she asked for Mrs. Borkman?
Yes, ma'am.
I see. Then ask her in.
This way, ma'am.
You're surprised to see me, Gunhild.
Haven't you made a mistake? The bailiff lives in the side wing.
It's you I want to see today.
Very well, then. Sit down.
Thank you. I prefer to stand.
As you please. But at least undo your fur cloak.
Yes, it's very hot here.
I am always cold.
It is nearly 8 years since we last saw one another, Gunhild.
Since we last spoke to each other.
Yes, I dare say you've seen me sometimes when I made my yearly visit to the bailiff.
Once or twice.
I've caught a glimpse of you once or twice at the window.
You must have seen me through the curtains, then. But the last time we spoke to each other was here in this room, the week before he was let out.
I shall never forget it.
I can't understand how such a thing could happen to our family, such a noble family.
Oh, Gunhild, there were so many families besides ours that suffered.
Oh, yes, the others don't trouble me very much. For them it was only a little money or papers. But for us, for me and Erhard, the shame and Philippines, the disgrace and the ruin.
How does he bear it, Gunhild?
Do you think I have asked?
Oh, surely you don't need to ask.
As I ever talked to him. A man who was in prison for 5 years. To think what the name of John Gabriel Borkman used to mean. No. I shall never see him again. Never.
You are hard, Gunhild.
Yes. Towards him.
After all, he's your husband.
Did he not say in court that I was responsible for his ruin? That I spent recklessly?
Wasn't there some truth in it?
But he made me do it. He insisted on our living so lavishly.
But surely you should have restrained him.
How was I to know it was not his own money? And wasn't he even more extravagant?
Well, I suppose he had to keep up appearances.
Yes, he always had to cut a figure. He used to drive a four-in-hand as if he were a king. And had people bowing and scraping as if he were a king. And they always called him by his Christian names, just like the king himself. John Gabriel. Everyone knew what a great man John Gabriel was.
He was a great man then.
Yes, to all appearances. But he never said a word about his real position. Never hinted where the money came from.
I don't suppose anyone else knew either.
I don't care about anyone else. It was his duty to tell me. He never did that. He kept on lying to me. And then it all fell to pieces about us. The whole thing.
Yes. Everything. Not only for him.
But I shall not give up. I shall redeem myself yet.
Redeem yourself?
Redeem my name, honor, and fortune. I have someone who will help me. Who will make up for everything his father has done.
Gunhild, you mean Erhard?
Yes. My own son. He would redeem everything. Isn't that really what you'd expected ever since he was a child?
No, I can't say that.
Then why did you take him away and bring him up?
Because you couldn't look after him.
No, I couldn't. And his father, he had a good enough excuse. He couldn't either.
How can you say that?
And you? How could you bring up John Gabriel's child as if he were your own? How could you take him away from me and keep him until he was nearly grown up? What was your real reason?
I came to love him so much.
More than I, his mother.
And he was rather a delicate child.
Delicate.
Well, I thought so then, at any rate, and the air on the West Coast is so much milder than here.
Really? Ah, it's true. You've done a great deal, Fairheart. But then you could afford it. You were luckier. You managed to save your money.
I managed nothing. It wasn't until afterwards I knew my securities hadn't been touched.
Well, I don't understand anything about these things. I only say you were lucky. But what was your motive when you undertook to educate Earhart? What did you want to make of him?
I wanted him to find happiness in life.
People in our position have something more than happiness to consider.
What, then?
Earhart must be so successful that no trace shall be left of the shadow his father has cast upon my name and his.
Gunhild, is this what Earhart himself wants from life?
I should hope so.
Isn't it rather what you want for him?
Earhart and I always want the same thing.
You're so very sure of him, Gunhild.
Yes, I am. Thank God.
Well, then I suppose you must be happy after all.
I am, as far as it goes. But I still have bitter memories.
Gunhild, Earhart doesn't live out here with you, does he?
Earhart cannot live out here with me. He has to live in the town. He must, for his studies. But he comes out for a little while every evening.
May I see him, then?
He has not come yet. But I expect him any minute.
But surely he must have come. I can hear his footsteps overhead.
Up in the great room.
I hear him walking up and down ever since I came.
That is not Earhart. It is him.
Borkman? John Gabriel Borkman?
He walks up and down, backwards and forwards, from morning to night, day in, day out.
I'd heard that.
I dare say people talk about us a great deal.
Earhart has mentioned it in his letters. He said his father generally stayed up there by himself and you alone down here.
Yes, that is how it has been. Ever since they let him out and sent him home 8 years ago.
It must be a terrible life, Gunhild.
It is almost unendurable. Always hearing his footsteps out there, from morning till night. I often feel as if I had a sick wolf pacing his cage up there in the great room. Right over my head. Do you hear? Backwards and forwards. Up and down. Goes the wolf.
Can't it be changed, Gunhild?
He's never made any move to change.
Oh, could you not make the first move?
I, after all he has done to me. No, thank you. Let the wolf go on prowling up there.
This room is too hot for me. May I take off my cloak?
I asked you to.
Don't you ever meet him outside?
In society, I mean.
Well, no, when he goes out walking in the woods or...
Never goes out.
Not even at night?
Never.
He can't bring himself to go out?
No. He has his cloak and hat hanging in the cupboard. The cupboard in the hall, you know.
The cupboard we used to hide in when we were children.
A man there, late in the evening. I hear him come by, as if to go out. But he always stops halfway and turns back to the great room.
Don't any of his old friends ever come to see him?
He has no old friends.
He had so many once.
He still lost them. call it contemptible for them to make so much fuss at their losses. They were only money losses, after all.
So he lives up there. Quite alone.
Yes, practically. Tell me, an old clerk or copyist or something comes to see him now and then.
Yes, I expect that's Foldal. They were friends when they were young.
Of course, he only comes when it is dark.
Foldal was one of those who suffered when the bank failed.
Yes, I believe he lost some money. It wasn't much.
It was all he had.
Can't have been much. Nothing to speak of.
And he didn't speak of it at the trial, did he?
Anyway, Earhart has more than made up for anything he lost.
Earhart? Oh.
He has taken an interest in Foldal's youngest daughter. He's been giving her lessons so that later on she can get work and keep herself. That is more than her father could have done for her.
Yes, I dare say her father can't afford anything.
And Earhart has arranged for her to have music lessons. She has made such progress that she can come up to the great room and play to him.
So he's still fond of music?
Oh, yes, I suppose so. Of course, he has the piano you sent for him when he came back.
And she plays to him?
Yes, now and then, in the evenings. Earhart arranged that, too.
Just as the poor girl to come all the way out here and back again.
No, Earhart has arranged for her to stay with the lady who lives near us, Mrs. Wilton.
Mrs. Wilton?
A very rich woman. You don't know her.
I've heard of her. Mrs. Frances Wilton?
Yes.
Earhart has mentioned her several times. Does she live out here now?
Yes. She took a villa here some time ago.
They say she's divorced.
Her husband has been dead for some years.
But they were divorced. He got a divorce.
He deserted her. I'm sure it wasn't her fault.
Do you know her well?
Oh, pretty well. She lives near here, and she looks in every now and then.
Would you like her?
She's very intelligent and clear in her judgment.
In her judgment of people, you mean?
Yes, principally of people. She's made quite a study of Earhart. Looked deep into his character, so she idolizes him. How could she help it?
Well, then perhaps she knows Earhart better than she knows you.
Yes, Earhart saw a good deal of her in time.
Yes. I think I also have a certain claim upon Earhart.
No doubt, after all the money you spent
on him. Oh, no, not on that account, Gunhild, but because I love him.
Love my son. You, in spite of everything.
Yes, in spite of everything, I love Earhart. As much as I can love anyone now at my time of life.
Oh, suppose you do. What then?
Well, then I'm troubled when I see anything threatening him.
Threatening Earhart? What threatens him? Or who?
You first, in your way.
I.
And then there's Mrs. Wilton.
And you can believe this of Earhart. As my son, who has a great mission.
Oh, his mission.
How dare you speak of it like that?
Do you think a healthy, spirited young man like Earhart is going to sacrifice himself for a mission?
I know he will.
That's only a dream. If you hadn't that to cling to, you'd be in utter despair.
Yes, indeed. Then I would despair. Perhaps that is what you would like, Ella.
Yes, I would rather see that than see you redeem yourself at Earhart's expense.
You want to come between us? You?
I want to free him from you.
You are too late. You had him in your power until he was 15, but now I have won him back.
Then I will win him again. We two have fought over a man before, Gunhild.
Yes, and I won.
Do you still think that victory was worth winning?
No. God knows you're right.
There will be no victory worth winning for you this time either.
Not when I'm fighting for my son.
No. It's only power over him you want.
And you.
I want his love, his whole heart.
You shall never have that.
You have seen to that.
Couldn't you see it in his letters?
Yes, I could see you in his letters.
I have made the best of these 8 years.
What have you told Earhart about me?
I have only told you the truth.
Well?
I have impressed upon him every day that it is you we have to thank for being able to live as we do. For being able to live at all.
Earhart knew this already.
When he came home to me, he imagined you had done it out of kindness. He does not believe that any longer.
Then what does he believe?
The truth. I asked him why he thought Aunt Ella never came here to visit us.
He knew already.
He knows better now. You made him believe it was to spare me and him up there in the great room.
So it was.
Earhart does not believe that now.
What have you made him believe?
He believes the truth, that you are ashamed of us. And you pretend you aren't. Didn't you once plan to take him away from
me? Oh, that was at the height of the scandal when the case was before the court. But not now.
It would not matter if you did have plans for him. He has his mission. It is me Earhart needs, not him. And so, he's as good as dead to you, and you to him.
We shall see. I shall stay here now.
Here?
Yes.
Here with us? Stay all night?
I shall stay here for the rest of my life, if need be.
Very well. The house is yours. Everything is yours. The chair I'm sitting in is yours. The bed I toss in at night belongs to you. The food we eat comes from you.
It can't be helped. Borkman can't hold any property. If he did, someone would claim it.
Yes, I know. So we have to live on your charity. When do you want us to move out?
Move out?
Yes, you don't imagine I will live under the same roof with you. I would rather go to the workhouse.
Good. Then let me take Earhart home with me.
Earhart? He shall choose between us.
Dare you risk that, Gunhild?
Dare. Let my son choose between his mother and you. Yes. Indeed, I dare.
Good evening, Mrs. Borkman.
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Wilson.
Oh, I beg your pardon. You have a visitor.
No, it's only my sister. She's just come.
Is Aunt Ella here?
Aunt?
Possible. Are you here?
Oh, my dear boy. But, my dear, I've grown. Oh, how good it is to see you.
How long have you been out there?
Out? Oh, Mr. Borkman came with me.
So, how do you visit other people before your mother?
I had to go to Mrs. Wilton's for a moment to call the little Frieda.
Is Miss Fogel with you, too?
Yes, we left her in the hall.
You can go upstairs, Frieda.
Well, Mrs. Wilton, if you can give us the pleasure of your company this evening, won't you?
Thank you, but I really can't. We have another engagement. We're going to the Hinkles.
We?
Oh, I ought really to have said I. But I was asked to bring Mr. Borkman with me if I happened to see him.
You did happen to see him?
Yes, fortunately, when he called for Frieda.
But Earhart, I didn't know you knew the Hinkles.
I don't exactly know them. You know better than anybody, Mother, who I know and don't know.
Oh, they soon put you at ease there. They're such hospitable people. The house swarms with young ladies.
If I know my son, Mrs. Wilton, they are not fit company for him.
Well, Mother, it's clear I can't go to the Hinkles this evening. I shall stay here with you and Aunt Ella.
I knew you would.
Yeah, Aunt, you must not stay at home on my account.
My dear Aunt, I can't think of going. But what shall we do, Mrs. Wilton? Can I get out of it? You've accepted for me, haven't you?
I am quite used to saying both yes and no. And you can't possibly leave your aunt just when she's arrived. For shame, Monsieur Earhart. Is that how a good son behaves?
Son?
Well, adopted son, Mrs. Borkman.
You may well add that.
Oh, we often have more cause to be grateful to a foster mother than to our own.
Has that been your experience?
I knew very little of my own mother, I'm sorry to say. But if I had had such a good foster mother, perhaps I shouldn't have been so bad as people say I am. Well, now, stay at home like a good boy and drink tea with Mama and Auntie. Goodbye, Mrs. Borkman. Goodbye, Miss Rentine.
Can't I go part of the way with you?
Not just step. I'm quite used to finding my own way. But beware, Mr. Borkman.
What am I to beware of?
As I go down the road, deserted and forlorn, I shall try to cast a spell. depend on you.
Oh, are you going to try that again?
Yes, just you beware. As I go down the road, I shall say from the very center of my being, Mr. Earhart Borkman, put on your hat.
And you think he will.
Yes, you do it at once. And then I shall say, now put on your overcoat, Earhart Borkman, and your galoshes. Don't forget the galoshes. And follow me. Do it. Do it. Do it.
Oh, I shall.
Do it. Do it. Good night.
Does she really play that sort of trick?
Oh, no, it's only her fun. But don't let's talk about her. Fancy coming all this way, Aunt Ella, and in winter.
Well, I have to, Earhart.
Why?
I had come to consult the doctors.
Oh, I'm glad.
Glad?
I mean, I'm glad you made up your mind to come at last.
Are you ill, Ella?
You know I'm ill.
I know you haven't been strong for years.
Are you worse?
Yes, Earhart, I'm worse now.
But it's not dangerous.
Well, that depends upon how you look at it.
Then you mustn't think of going home yet.
No, I'm not thinking of it.
Your aunt wants to live here in her own house, Earhart.
Here, with us? Is this true, aunt?
Yes, that's what I've decided to do.
Everything here belongs to your aunt, you know.
I shall stay here, Earhart, for the present, in the bailiff's wing.
That's a good idea. There are plenty of rooms there. But aren't you tired after your journey?
Yes, rather tired.
Then I think you ought to go to bed early. Really early.
I'm going to.
And then we can have a good long talk tomorrow or some other time about everything, you and Mother and I. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Earhart, I can see you're going to leave me.
What do you mean?
You are going to the Hinkles.
Oh, Sam. You wouldn't have me keep Aunt Ella up half the night, would you? Remember, she's an invalid, Mother.
You are going to the Hinkles, Earhart.
Well, really, Mother, I don't think I can get out of it. What do you think, Aunt?
I should like you to feel free, Earhart.
Do you want to take him away from me?
Yes, if I can, Gunhild.
Oh, I can't stand this. What have I done with my hat? Do you know what she is playing up there, Aunt?
No, what is it?
It's the Danse Macabre, the Dance of Death. Don't you know it, Aunt?
Not yet, Earhart.
Mother, please let me go.
Away from your mother. So that is what you want.
I'll come out again. Tomorrow, perhaps.
You want to go away from me, to be with those people with... No, I won't think of it.
There are bright lights down there and young, happy faces and music, Mother.
There is music here, too.
Yes, and it's driving me out of the house. I can't stand it.
Be strong. Do not forget your great mission.
Mother, I wasn't born to be a missionary. Good night, dear aunt. Good night, Mother.
It has not taken you long to get him back, Ella.
I wish I could believe it.
But you won't be able to keep him long
because of you.
Or her.
I'd rather see than you.
I understand that. I say the same. Rather she than you.
Whatever happens to him,
does it matter?
For the first time in our lives, we twin sisters are of a mind.
Good night, Gunhild.
Can you guess when I first heard music like that?
No, Mr. Bolton.
Down in the mines.
In the mines?
I'm a miner's son, you know. Or perhaps you didn't know that.
No, Mr. Bolton.
A miner's son. Sometimes my father used to take me with him down into the mines. Down there, the iron ore seems.
Does it?
The hammer blows that loosen it, the chimes of a midnight clock that strikes to set it free. That is why the iron ore sings, for joy. Because it wants to come up into the light of day and serve mankind.
Mr. Bolton, I'm afraid I must go.
Already?
I'll have another engagement to play this evening.
For a party?
Yes, for the dance after supper.
Do you like playing at parties?
Yes, if I can earn a little extra.
Is that what you think about when you're playing for the dancing?
No, I generally think how hard it is that I can't join in.
Yes. Not to be able to join in is the hardest thing of all. But you've one consolation, Frida.
What's that?
The knowledge that you've 10 times more music in you than all the dancers put together.
I don't know about that.
You must never have doubts about yourself.
But since no one knows...
So long as you know, that's all that matters. Where are you going to play this evening?
At Mr. Hinkle's.
Hinkle's?
Yes.
Does he give parties?
Yes, it's quite a big party, I heard Mrs. Wilton say.
What sort of people will be there?
I don't know. Except for young Mr. Bolton.
My son? How do you know?
He said so himself, an hour ago.
Is he out here today?
He's been at Mrs. Wilton's all the afternoon.
Do you know if he's been here, too? I mean, did he see anyone downstairs?
Yes, he looked in to see Mrs. Bolton.
I might have known.
There was a strange lady with her, I think.
Was there? Yes. I suppose people do come to see us sometimes.
If I meet young Mr. Bolton this evening, shall I ask him to come up and see you?
No. If people want to see me, they can come of their own accord.
Very well. I won't say anything then. Good night, Mr. Bolton.
Good night.
Do you mind if I go down the back stairs?
Oh, go down any stairs you like. Come in. Oh. It's only you, William.
Good evening, John Gabriel. Yes, it's only me.
You're rather late.
Well, it's quite a long way, especially on foot.
Why do you always walk? The tram passes your door.
It's better for you to walk, and it saves tuppence.
You may sit down, William.
Thank you. You can't think how lonely I am since Frida left home to live with Mrs. Wilton.
Come. You've plenty left.
Yes, God knows I have. 5 of them. But Frida was the only one who understood me. The others don't a bit.
No, that's it. Ordinary people don't understand men like us.
If it were only the lack of understanding, but there is something worse.
There's nothing worse than that.
Yes, there is, John Gabriel. There was a dreadful scene at home before I came here.
What about?
My family despised me.
You didn't make a very good choice when you married.
Had no choice. One needs companionship as one gets older, and I was in no position...
Are you blaming me?
No, for God's sake, John Gabriel.
You're thinking about the bank disaster, aren't you?
I don't blame you for that.
Well, that's something.
It's not my wife I complain of, it's the children. They're more educated. They expect more from life.
And so your children despise you.
I haven't made much of my life, I'm afraid.
And they know that when you were young, you wrote a tragedy?
Oh, yes, of course they know, but it doesn't seem to impress them.
Then they don't understand. Your tragedy is good. I'm convinced of it.
Oh, yes, there are some good things in it, aren't there, John Gabriel? If I could only get it produced. Let me show you one or two alterations I have made. Perhaps you'd like me to read you an act or two.
No, we'll keep that for another time.
Well, as you please.
You were right when you said just now you've not been successful. But I promise you, William, that as soon as I'm reinstated...
Oh, thank you.
Yes, no, don't get up. When I'm reinstated, when they see that they can't do without me, when they come to me here in this great room and beg me to take control of the bank again, the new bank they don't know how to manage, here I shall stand and receive them and lay down my conditions. You look doubtful. Don't you believe they'll come? That they must come someday? Don't you believe it?
God knows I do.
I believe it. I know they'll come. If I'd not been convinced, I'd have put a bullet through my head long ago.
Oh, no, no, for God's sake.
But they will come. You'll see. Any day. Any moment.
If only they would come quickly.
Yes. The years slip by. Life. No. I don't think so. You know what I sometimes feel?
No.
Like a Napoleon, maidened in his first battle.
I feel like that, too.
On a smaller scale, of course.
My little world of poetry is precious to me, John Gabriel.
Yes, but think of me. Who could have created millions? All the minds I should have controlled. New veins explored. And the waterfalls and the quarries and the trade routes. Steamships all the world over.
Yes, I know. There was nothing in the world you could not have done.
And I sit here like a wounded eagle while others pass me and take everything from me, piece by piece.
That is my fate, too.
I was so near my goal. Well, it had another week. All the deposits would have been covered. All the securities replaced. Vast companies were about to be floated. No one would have lost a halfpenny.
Yes, you were on the verge of success.
Treachery overtook me at a critical moment. You know what I consider to be the most infamous crime?
No.
It's not murder, not robbery or perjury. The most infamous crime is to betray the trust of a friend.
Yes.
I know what you're going to say, but they would have got their money back, every farthing. No. The most infamous crime that a man can commit is to misuse a friend's letters. To publish to the world what has been confided to him alone. And in closest secrecy, like a whisper in a dark, empty, locked room. The man who can do this is infected and poisoned in every fiber. And such a friend was mine, was he who crushed me.
I can guess who you mean.
I told him everything. And then when the moment came, he turned against me the weapons I'd placed in his hands.
I've never been able to understand why he... Of course, there were all sorts of whispers at the time.
What whispers? Tell me. I know nothing. I had to go straight into isolation. What did people whisper, William?
You were to have gone into the cabinet, they said.
Oh. I was offered a portfolio, but I refused it.
Then you didn't stand in his way over there?
Oh, no. That was not why he betrayed me.
I really can't understand.
In fact, William, there was a woman in the case.
A woman? But John Gabriel.
Well, let's say no more. After all, neither of us got into the cabinet.
But he rose high.
And I fell. Oh,
it's a tragedy.
Yes. Just like your play.
Yes, indeed.
But looked at from another point of view, it's really a comedy as well.
A comedy?
Did you meet Frida as you came in?
No.
While we're sitting here, she's playing waltzes for the man who betrayed me.
I had no idea of that.
And can you guess who will be there dancing?
No.
My son.
What?
What do you think of that, William? Am I not right in calling it a comedy?
How can he possibly be a guest there?
Ah, no doubt he thinks, like everyone else, that Hinkle only did his duty when he betrayed me.
But who could have got him to believe that?
You forget who brought him up. First his aunt, from the age of 6 or 7, and then his mother.
I think you're being unfair.
I'm never unfair. Both have poisoned his mind against me. All women ruin our lives for us.
Oh, surely not all.
Can you name me one good woman?
I like to think that somewhere in the world, somewhere far away, a true woman exists.
Oh, don't talk such poetic nonsense.
You call my holiest faith poetic nonsense?
Yes, I do. That's what always prevented you from getting on in the world. Without it, I could still help you to rise in life.
Oh, but you can't.
I can, when I come into power again.
That won't be for a long time.
Plus, you think the day will never come? Answer me.
I don't know what to say.
Then I've no longer any use for you.
No use?
Since you don't believe my tide will turn...
You'd have to be legally reinstated, and there's no precedent for such a thing.
Exceptional men are above precedent.
The law doesn't make distinctions.
You're no poet, will you? We're wasting each other's time. You better not come again.
You really mean that?
I'm no longer any use for you.
No, I dare say not.
You've been lying to me all the time.
I'm never lying, John Gabriel.
And you sat there, feeding me with hope and trust and confidence, all lies?
As long as you believed in me, I believed in you.
And we've been deceiving each other, perhaps deceiving ourselves.
Isn't that the essence of friendship, John Gabriel?
Yeah. Friendship means deception. I learned that once before.
I am no poet. And you could say it so bluntly.
Well, I don't pretend to know much about these matters.
Yeah. You may know more than you think. I've had my doubts, too. Perhaps I've wasted my life for a delusion.
If you have no faith in yourself, you're lost indeed.
That was why I found such comfort in coming here. You believed in me. But now, you have become a stranger to me.
And you to me.
Good night, John Gabriel.
Good night, William. Who is that? Who is it? Come in. Who are you? What do you want?
It is I, Bachman.
Ella. Ella Wendheim.
Yes. You're Ella, as you used to call me in the old days, many years ago. Do you recognize me?
Yes. Now I begin to.
The years have brought winter with them, Bothran. Don't you think so?
You have changed.
Yes, there are no dark curls on my neck now. Curls you love to twist round your fingers.
Ah, yes. I see now, Ella, you do your hair differently.
Yes. It's the way I do my hair that makes the difference.
Had no idea you were in this part of the world?
I've only just arrived.
Why, have you come all this way in winter? Have you come to see me?
You, among others.
You look tired.
Yes, I am tired.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you. I need rest. It seems an eternity since we met Bachman face to face.
It's a long time. And terrible things have happened.
A whole lifetime has passed. A wasted lifetime.
Wasted?
Yes, wasted. For both of us.
I don't regard my life as wasted yet.
And what of mine?
That was your responsibility, Ella.
You can say that.
You could have been happy without me.
Oh, yes. I know there was someone else ready to marry me.
But you refused him.
Yes, I did.
Time after time you refused him. Year after year.
Year after year, I rejected happiness, I suppose you think.
You could have been perfectly happy with him. And then I would have been saved.
Saved?
He thought I was responsible for your refusals. And so he took his revenge. It was easy for him. I trusted him. He'd all my confidential letters. He used them. It was all over with me for the time, at any rate. And so you see, all this was because of you. Ever.
You mean it was all my fault?
It depends how you look at it. I know all that you've done for us. You bought this house and the whole property at the auction. You put the house entirely at my disposal and your sister's. You took charge of Earhart and brought him up.
As long as I was allowed to.
By your sister, you mean? I've never concerned myself in these domestic affairs. But you were in a position to make sacrifices, Ella. And you mustn't forget, it was I who placed you in that position.
Oh, it was no sacrifice, Borkman. It was my love for Earhart and for you that made me do it.
Ella, we're not talking about love. On the eve of my great decisive battle, when I had to seize the millions that were entrusted to me, I spared all that was yours, every farthing of it.
Yes, that's true, Borkman, but I've often wondered what your real reason was for sparing all my property and only mine.
Perhaps you think it was so that I might have something to fall back upon if things went wrong.
Oh, no, I'm sure you didn't think of that then.
Never. I was so sure of victory.
Well, why was it then?
When I used to grapple silently and alone with all the great projects I had in mind, I felt like a man who is starting on a voyage in a balloon. All through the sleepless nights, I was inflating my giant balloon, preparing to soar into perilous and unknown regions.
You, who never had the least doubt of victory.
Men are made like that, Ella. They both doubt and believe. I suppose that was why I wouldn't take you and your money with me in my balloon.
But tell me why.
One doesn't risk what is dearest on such a voyage.
But you had risked what was dearest to you. Your whole life.
Life is not always what one holds dearest.
Was that how you felt then?
I think it was.
I was the dearest thing in the world to you?
I seem to remember it was like that.
And yet years have passed since you deserted me and married someone else.
Deserted you? You must know that it was higher motives. Well, other motives that compelled me. Without his help, I could have done nothing.
So you deserted me from higher motives?
Could do nothing without him. And he made you the price.
And you paid the price without haggling.
I had no choice. I had to conquer or fall.
And yet you say I was the dearest thing in the world.
Both then and long, long after.
And you sold my love for a post as bank director.
I was driven by necessity, Ella.
Criminal.
I've been called that before.
Oh, I'm not thinking of the law or of the securities. But if I could have stood at your side when the crash came,
I would have helped you to bear it all.
You're mad, Ella.
You killed love in me. Don't you understand the greatest and the most unpardonable sin is to murder love in a human being?
You say I have done that?
You have. I never understood until this evening what really happened to me. That you deserted me and turned to Gunhild. I took to be fickleness on your part and heartless scheming on hers. But now I see it. You deserted the woman you loved. Me. You sold me for gain. That is the double murder you have committed. The murder of your soul and of mine.
You are always a passionate nature, Ella. But you must remember that I am a man. As a woman, you are the dearest thing in the world to me. If the worst comes to the worst, one woman can always take the place of another.
Was that your experience when you married Gunhild?
No. But my great mission in life helped me to bear that. I wanted to command the sources of power in this country. All the wealth that lay hidden in the earth, in the rocks, in the forests, in the sea. I wanted to be master of it all and turn it to great use.
Yes, I remember all the evenings we spent talking over your plans.
Yes. With you, I could talk, Ella.
I used to laugh at your dreams and ask you if you wanted to wake the sleeping spirits of the mind.
I remember that phrase. The sleeping spirits of the mind.
Yes, but you didn't see it as a joke. You said, Ella, if only I could get a foothold.
I love power. I knew of his passion for you. And so I struck the bargain. I had to. He helped me up towards those beckoning heights. And I mounted and mounted. Year by year, I mounted.
And I was wiped out of your life.
And then he hurled me into the abyss. Because of you, Ella.
Bolton? Don't you think there was a curse upon our whole relationship?
Yes. But why? Ella, I begin to wonder which of us is right. You or I.
It is you who have sinned. You have killed all happiness for me.
Don't say that, Ella.
From the day your image began to fade, it has grown harder and harder for me to love any living creature. People, animals, plants. I shrank from all. From all but one.
What one?
Erhard, of course.
Has he really been so close to me?
Why else did I take him and keep him as long as I could?
I thought it was out of compassion, like all you did.
I've known compassion since you deserted me. I was incapable of feeling anything. The poor, starving child came into my kitchen, shivering and crying, begging for food. I let the servants see to it. I never wanted to look after the child myself, to warm and comfort it. And yet, I was not like that when I was young. It is you who have created the desert within me. I feel nothing.
Except for Erhard.
Yes, except for your son. I feel nothing for any other living thing. He cheated me of a mother's joy and happiness, and of a mother's sorrow and tears. That's my greatest loss, and that's what I needed most. But I could not resign myself to my loss then, and so... Instead, I took Erhard and won his love entirely until his mother took him from me again. I can't bear the solitude, the emptiness, now that I've lost him.
I don't think you've lost him. Hearts are not so easily lost to a certain person below.
I have lost Erhard. and she has won him back. Or someone else has. That's plain enough in his letters.
You've the strongest claim upon him.
Oh, what's the use of claims? If he's not mine of his own free will, he's not mine at all. I must have his undivided heart.
Your heart is over 20. You'd hardly expect to keep his undivided heart for long.
It would not be for very long.
I should have thought that when you want something, you would want it for as long as you live.
Yes, but that need not be for very long.
What do you mean?
You know I haven't been well for years.
Haven't you?
This autumn I was so much worse I had to come and see a specialist.
And have you seen him?
Yes, this morning.
And what did he say?
My illness can't be cured, Borkman. The doctors can do nothing. They can only ease the pain a little.
Oh, it could be a long time yet. Believe me, Ella.
He thinks I may last the winter.
But what caused this illness? What can have brought it on?
Well, the doctor thought that at one time I had perhaps gone through some great emotional stress.
Ah, I understand. You mean it's my fault?
No, it's too late to go into that now. But I must have my child again before I go. It is hard enough to leave the sunshine, but harder still not to leave behind someone who will remember me as a son remembers his mother.
Take him, Ella, if you can.
You give your consent. Can you?
Yes. And it's no great sacrifice. He's not mine anyway.
Oh, thank you. But I have one more thing to beg of you, Borkman.
Well, what is it?
When I die, I shall have a great deal to leave behind me, and I shall leave it to Erhard.
Well, you've really no one nearer to you.
No, that's it. The name of Rentheim dies with me. And that is what tortures me, that even my name will die.
Ah, I see what you want.
Let Erhard take my name.
You want to save my son from having to bear his father's name. Very well, Ella. I'm man enough to bear my name alone.
Thank you. Now, all is well. This full settlement between us. You have atoned as fully as you can. And when I die, I shall leave Erhard Rentheim behind me.
Never. He shall never take that name.
Gunhild.
No one is allowed to come up into my room.
I do not ask for your permission.
What do you want?
I shall fight to protect you from the powers of evil.
The powers of evil are in you.
Perhaps. But I tell you, he shall bear his father's name and bear it with honor. And I alone will be his mother. My son's heart shall be mine, and mine alone.
Borkman, Erhard's life will be wrecked in this storm. You must come to an understanding with Gunhild. We must go down to her.
We?
You and I.
She's hard. Hard as the metal I once dreamt of hewing from the rocks.
Then try it now.
Where have you been, Malena? I've rung twice.
Yes, Mum, I have.
Then why didn't you come?
Well, I had to put some clothes on first.
Get dressed properly and then run and fetch my son. He's at Mr. Hinkle's.
Oh, is that where he is this evening?
Where else should he be?
Well, he thought he might be where he usually is.
Where do you mean?
At that Mrs. Wilton's, as they call her.
Mrs. Wilton's? My son isn't often there.
I've heard say he's there every day.
Nonsense, Malena. Go to Mr. Hinkle's and get hold of him.
Very well.
What does this mean?
God save us!
What does he want down here in my room?
He wants to come to an understanding with you, Gunhild.
It is too late. When we stood face to face in the court, when I had to give an account...
This evening, it is I who will give an account of myself.
You?
Not of what I've done. All the world knows that.
Yes, all the world knows that.
It doesn't know why I did it. Why I had to do it. It was because I was John Gabriel Borkman. Myself. And not anyone else.
And that is what I will try to explain.
It is no use trying to explain.
During my endless years in prison and during my 8 years up there in the great room, I've had ample time to think it over. I've retried the whole case by myself, time after time. I've been my own accuser, my own defender, and my own judge. I've been more impartial than anyone else could be. I've paced up and down the great room, turning my actions over and over and over again. And my final judgment is always the same. But the one person I've sinned against is myself.
And what about me? And what about your son?
You and he are included when I say myself.
And what about the hundreds of others you ruined?
I had power, an irresistible urge within me. In prison, millions lay deep in the bowels of the earth, calling to be freed. But no one else heard them. I alone.
Disgracing the name of Borkman.
If others had had the power, wouldn't they have acted as I did?
No one but you would have done it.
No one else could have done it. And I only did it from the highest motives. So I have acquitted myself. But of one thing, I am guilty.
Of what?
I've wasted 8 precious years of my life. The day I was released, I should have gone out into the world and climbed up to the heights again, higher than ever before, in spite of all that had happened.
I do not understand you.
No, that's the trouble. I've never found anyone who could understand me.
Never, Borkman.
Except one, perhaps long, long ago, in the days when I didn't think I needed understanding.
Why have you never come and asked me for what you call understanding?
What use would that have been?
You have never loved anything but yourself.
I've loved power.
Yes, power.
The power to create happiness around me.
You once had the power to make me happy. Why did you never use it?
Someone usually must get lost in a shipwreck.
And your own son? Did you use your power to make him happy?
I didn't know him.
No, you don't even know him.
You have taken care of that.
You don't know what else I've taken care of.
What?
I've taken care of the name you will leave behind you.
You make it sound as if I were dead already.
And so you are.
Yes, perhaps you are right. But no, not yet. I've been very close to death. But now I've awakened. Life lies before me, shining and beckoning. And you shall see it too.
Never dream of life again. Lie quiet where you are.
Gunnhild, how can you?
I will raise the monument over your grave.
The pillar of shame, I suppose you mean.
It won't be made of stone or metal. And your tomb shall be hidden by trees and bushes. Hiding forever from the thoughts and eyes of men, John Gabriel Borkman.
And you will perform this labor of love?
Not by myself. But I've brought up one to help me, who shall live for this alone. His life shall be so pure and bright that your burrowing in the dark shall be as though it had never been.
You mean Erhard?
Yes, Erhard, my son, whose very name you would take away from him.
To atone for my greatest sin.
A sin towards a stranger only. What of the sin towards me? But he will not obey you. When I cry out to him in my need, he will come to me. It is with me that he will remain. With me and no one else. I hear him. Erhard.
Mother, what in God's name? Father. What do you want, Mother? What has happened?
I want you to be with me always.
With you? Always? What do you mean?
There is someone who wants to take you from me.
So you know?
I know everything. I know your aunt has come here to take you away from me.
Aunt Ella?
Yes, she wants to take your mother's place. She wants you to be her son and not mine, to renounce your own name and take hers.
Aunt Ella, is this true?
Yes, it is true.
Why do you want me with you again?
Because I'm lonely and dying.
Dying?
Yes, dying. Will you come and be with me to the end?
And forsake your mother and your mission in life?
Answer me, Erhard.
Aunt Ella, you've been very good to me.
With you, I grew up in perfect happiness. But I cannot sacrifice myself to you now.
I knew it. You shall not have him, Ella.
You have won him back, Gunhild.
Say it is true, Erhard.
Mother, I must tell you.
What?
I can't stay with you either. I am stifled in this house.
Stifled?
Come with me, Erhard.
No, Aunt Ella, it's the same with you.
Have you forgotten what you've consecrated your life to, Erhard?
What you have consecrated my life to? You've been my will. You never let me have any of my own. But now I can't bear it any longer. I am young. Remember that, Mother.
Who has changed you?
Who? Can't you believe I've done it myself?
No. You've come under some strange power. You are not in your mother's any longer. Nor in your foster mother's either.
I am free now, Mother. I am my own master.
Then perhaps my hour has come at last.
What do you mean, sir?
Their hearts. Will you cast in your lot with your father? One man cannot atone for another, whatever may have been said in this airless room. All these years I've lived upon hopes and dreams. Now I have done with dreaming.
What will you do, sir?
I will work out my own redemption. I will begin at the bottom again. It's only through his present and his future that a man can atone for his past. Atone through work. Erhard, will you join and help me in this new life?
Do not do it, Erhard.
Yes, do it. Help him, Erhard.
Will you, Erhard?
Father, I can't now. It's impossible. I'm young. I want to live my own life.
Erhard, what will you live for?
For happiness, Mother.
And where will you find that?
I have found it.
Erhard!
You can come in now, Francis.
Mrs. Wilton.
I have told them everything, Francis.
I suppose you all think I have brought great calamity on this house.
You have destroyed the only interest I had left in life. Are you really in earnest, Erhard?
It means happiness for me, Mother. That is all I can say.
You have tricked my son.
Erhard came to me of his own free will, and of my own free will I went halfway to meet him.
Yes, I can believe that.
Mrs. Borkman, there are forces in life that you seem to know very little about.
What forces, may I ask?
Forces which ordain that two people shall join their lives indissolubly and fearlessly.
I thought you were already indissolubly joined to someone else.
He has left me.
But he's still alive, I believe.
He's dead to me.
Yes, Mother, he's dead to Francis. Besides, it makes no difference to me.
You know, and yet you say it makes no difference.
I can only tell you I want to be happy, Mother. I am young. I must live.
You are too young for this, Erhard.
You must not think I haven't said that, Mrs. Borkman. He knows everything about me. Again and again I've reminded him I'm 7 years older than he is. But it was no use.
No use? Then why didn't you send him away?
I couldn't do that, Mrs. Borkman.
Why?
Because this meant happiness for me, too.
Happiness.
I have never known happiness in life before. And I cannot reject it merely because it comes so late.
And how long do you think this happiness will last?
Whether it lasts or not, Mother, it doesn't matter. I don't want to look into the future. I'm going to live my own life at last.
Life, you call it. And I shall have to bear this shame as well.
You are used to it, Gunhild.
Day after day I shall see my son linked to...
You shall see nothing, Mother. I shall not stay here.
I am going abroad, Mrs. Borkman. I am taking a young girl with me. And Erhard is going with us.
With you and a young girl?
Yes, little Frieda Foldal. I am taking her abroad to study music.
And what do you say to this, Erhard?
Well, Mother, if Francis wishes it.
And when does this distinguished party set out?
Tonight. My sleigh is waiting outside the Hinkles.
Ah, yes. The party.
Erhard and I wear the whole party. And little Frieda, of course.
Mother, I would have spared you this. You and everyone.
You would have gone without saying goodbye.
Yes, I thought that would be best for all of us. But of course, when you sent for me, I... Goodbye, Mother.
Don't touch me.
Goodbye then, Aunt Ella.
Goodbye, Erhard. Live your life. And be as happy as you can.
Thank you, Aunt. Goodbye, Father.
Mrs. Wilton. Do you think you're wise taking that girl with you?
The men are so changeable, Mrs. Borkman. And women, too. When Erhard is tired of me, and I with him, then it will be as well for us both that he should have someone to fall back on.
But you, yourself?
Oh, I shall know what to do. Erhard? Goodbye to you all. Childless.
Then out into the storm, alone.
John Gabriel, where are you going?
Out into the storm of life.
No.
Let me go, Ella.
No, you're ill. I see it in your face.
Let me go.
Help me to stop him, Gunhild.
I will not try to stop anyone. Let them go, both of them, as far as they please. Oh, Erhard, don't leave me.
Don't go after him, Gunhild.
He shall not leave me.
It's useless.
Let me go, Ella. I'll cry after him. He must hear his mother's cry. Sleigh bells.
It is Mrs. Wilton's sleigh. I know those silver bells. Driving past the bottom of the hill. Cry out now, Gunhild, if you must.
No, I will not cry out. Let Erhard Borkman drive away to what he calls life and happiness.
They've gone now.
They sounded like funeral bells for me. And for him.
Perhaps for him they're ringing in life and happiness, Gunhild. For a while, at any rate.
Life and happiness with her.
Indeed, I wish him that.
Then you must be richer in love than I.
Perhaps it is the lack of love that has kept my love alive.
If that is so, then I shall soon be as rich as you are, Ella.
Ella.
John, you must go in. Out of the cold, come in, into the house, into the warmth.
Up to that great room again. I suppose.
No, into the room below.
I shall never set foot under that roof again.
Where will you go? It's late and dark, John.
First, I shall go out to sea to all my buried treasure.
I don't understand, John.
Oh, I don't mean stolen property, Ella. Who's that? William? You? What do you want?
Good God. Are you out, John Gabriel? And Mrs. Borkman, too?
This is not Mrs. Borkman.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've lost my glasses in the snow. But, John Gabriel, surely you never go out?
It's time I came out into the open again, don't you think? Nearly 3 years in detention, 5 in prison, 8 in the great room there.
Borkman, I beg you.
But why have you come?
I had to come and see you, John Gabriel.
After I'd shown you the door.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
What have you done to your foot? You're limping.
I've been run over.
Run over?
Yes, by a covered sleigh.
Ah.
with 2 horses. They came down the hill at a gallop. I couldn't get out of the way, and they sent me rolling over and over in the snow. And I lost my glasses and got my umbrella broken and my ankle hurt.
Do you know who was in that sleigh, William?
No, how could I? It was a covered sleigh, and the curtains were drawn. And the driver didn't stop. But it doesn't matter a bit, because I'm so happy.
Happy?
Something so wonderful has happened. So I had to come and share my happiness with you, John Gabriel.
Well, share away then.
But take your friend inside, Borkman. He's been run over.
Oh, we're all run over sometime or another in life. But we must jump up again and let no one see we're hurt.
That is very profound, John Gabriel. I can easily tell you out here.
Yes, do, William.
Well, when I got home this evening, what did I find but a letter? Can you guess who it was from?
Perhaps your little Frieda?
Yes, it was a long, a pretty long letter from Frieda. A footman had brought it. And can you guess what was in it?
Perhaps it was to say goodbye?
Exactly. Well, you are good at guessing, John Gabriel. Yes, she tells me Mrs. Wilton has taken a fancy to her, and she's to go abroad with her and study music. And Mrs. Wilton has engaged a first-rate tutor who is to go with them as well.
Yes, I see it all quite clearly, William.
And only think, she knew nothing about it until this evening at that party, you know. And yet she found time to write to me.
Such a warm, affectionate letter, with not a trace of contempt for her father in it. She tells me they're going early tomorrow morning. But I can't let her go like that. I'm going straight up to Mrs. Wilton's now.
You won't get in, William.
Your daughter's already gone.
Gone? Already? Are you sure? Who told you?
Her tutor.
And who's he?
Mr. Erhard Borkman.
Your son, John Gabriel? Is he going with them?
Yes. He's to be little Frieda's tutor.
Oh, God be praised. She's in the best of hands. But are you sure they've gone?
They were in the sleigh which ran over you.
My little Frieda in that magnificent sleigh.
Did you notice the silver bells?
Silver bells? Oh, were they genuine silver bells?
Yes, everything was genuine. Inside and out.
Oh, isn't it strange how things work out for the best? Hmm? My little gift of poetry has become music in Frieda. So I was not born a poet for nothing. And she's going out into the great wide world that I wanted so much to see. Little Frieda sets out in a splendid covered sleigh with silver bells on the harness.
And runs over her father.
Oh, what does it matter about me? I'm too late, after all. I must just go home again and... comfort her mother. I left her crying in the kitchen.
You are laughing, William.
Yes, I am, of course. But she, poor thing, doesn't know any better. Well, goodbye. It's a good thing it's not far to the tram. Goodbye, John Gabriel. Goodbye, madam.
Goodbye, William. It's not the first time you've been run over, old friend.
You're so pale, John.
That is the prison air up there.
I've never seen you like this before.
No, you've never seen an escaped convict.
Do come into the house, John.
No good trying to persuade me.
Excuse me, Mrs. Borkman told me to lock the front door.
You see, Ella, they want to lock me up again.
Mr. Borkman's not well. He wants fresh air.
But Mrs. Borkman told
me. I'll see to it. Leave the key in the lock.
Oh, very well.
I'm outside the walls now, Ella. They shall never hold me again.
But you were free in there, John. You could come and go as you please.
I'll never go under a roof again. If I were to go back into that great room now, the ceiling and the walls would close in and crush me like a fly.
But where will you go?
On and on. I shall fight to find freedom and life and humanity again. Will you go with me?
I... Now?
Yes, now.
But how far?
As far as I can.
But, John, it's cold and dark.
You're worried about your health?
Oh, no, it's your health I'm worried about.
A dead man's health.
What did you call yourself?
A dead man. Don't you remember? Gunnhild said I was dead and told me to lie quiet where I was.
I will go with you.
Yes. You and I belong to each other, Ella. Come.
Where are we, John? Where are we going?
Follow my footprints in the snow.
Why must we climb so high?
We must go up that winding path.
I can't go much further.
We're not far from the clearing now. There used to be a bench.
You remember it?
You can rest there. Now, Ella, you shall see. See how the country stretches out away to the far horizon.
We often sat on this bench in the old days and could see much, much further.
It was a land of dreams we saw.
Yes, it was our land of dreams. Now that land is buried in snow. And the old tree is dead.
Can you see the smoke of the great steamships out on the fjord?
No.
I can. They come and go, spreading friendship and harmony around the world, bringing light and warmth to the hearts of men. That was what I dreamt of doing.
But it remained a dream.
Yes, it remained a dream. Listen. Down there by the river, the factories are at work. My factories. All those I would have built. Do you hear them? They're working night and day. The furnaces glow, the wheels whirl and spin round and round and round. Can't you hear them, Ella?
No.
I can.
You imagine it, John.
For those are only the foothills of the kingdom.
What kingdom?
My kingdom. The kingdom I was about to conquer when I died.
Oh, John.
It lies there now, defenseless, masterless, abandoned. Ella, do you see the mountain ranges far away, one behind another, rising and towering? That is my vast, unending, inexhaustible kingdom.
The wind from that kingdom is icy, John.
To me, that wind is the breath of life. It comes as a greeting from the forces that serve me. I feel them, those imprisoned powers. I see them, those veins of metal stretching their twisting, branching, enticing arms to me. I saw them before me, shadows that lived and moved, that night when I stood in the strong room of the bank with the candle in my hand. They longed to be freed, and I tried to free them, but I hadn't the power. So the treasure sank back into the earth. But I will whisper it to them here in the silence of the night. I love you. Lying there in deep darkness as if you were dead. I love you, unborn treasures craving for life. I love you with your gleaming promise of power and glory. I love you, love you, love you.
Yes. Your love is still down there, John, as it has always been. But up here, in the light of day, up here, there was a warm, living, human heart longing for you. And you broke it. No worse than that, 10 times worse, you sold it. For
the kingdom, and the power, and the glory.
Yes. You murdered love in the woman who loved you. The woman you loved, as far as you could love. And so I prophesy, John Gabriel Borkman, you will never get the price demanded for that murder. You will never enter in triumph into your cold, dark kingdom.
I almost fear your prophecy is true.
You must not fear it, John. It would be best for you.
Now it has let me go.
What was it?
A hand of ice that gripped my heart.
So you have felt the hand of ice?
No, not a hand of ice. A hand of iron.
Lie still. I'll go for help. No. Better so. John Bork. Better so for you.
Look, madam. Here are their footsteps.
There they are. Over there. Ella!
Are you looking for us?
I had to.
Here he is, Gunhild.
Sleeping?
A long, deep sleep, I fear.
Did he do it?
No.
Not by his own hand, then?
No. An ice-cold hand of iron gripped his heart.
So the night air has killed him.
So it seems.
Strong as he was.
Won't you look at him, Gunhild?
No. John Gabriel Borkman was a miner's son. He couldn't live in the fresh air.
It was the cold that killed him.
The cold that killed him long ago.
And turned us into shadows.
So it did.
A dead man and two shadows. That's what the cold has made of us.
Yes. The coldness of the heart. Now I think we two can take each other's hands, Ella.
I think we can now.
We twin sisters. Oh, the man we both loved.
We two shadows over the dead man.
In John Gabriel Borkman by Ibsen, John Gabriel Borkman was played by Ralph Richardson. Ella Rentheim by Irene Wirth, Mrs. Borkman by Sylvia Coleridge, and Mrs. Wilton by Prunella Scales. William Faldal, Timothy Bateson. Earhart, Richard Kay. Frieda, Julie Hallam. And the maid, Sandra Clark. The translation by William Archer was edited and produced by Charles Lefebvre.